ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Disneyland proudly presents Main Street Mekkies! Whoa!
Hi, welcome to Main Street Mekkies. I'm Noah, one of your hosts.
I'm beaming right now. That was so good. That was so great.
Right before we started, I pulled up a video of the guy doing the announcement just to make sure I could get as close as I could.
Oh, that was so good. I'm Alex, before I forget to say it. That's so good. I'm your other co-host. That was great. That
Welcome
was super good.
Back to Main Street Mekkies, the show where we talk about Disney and wish we were there.
Yep. Oh, on that topic, I have a little fun announcement.
Ooh, do tell.
I got a little countdown thing on my phone. I am officially 100 days before I will be getting on a plane and going to Florida.
Woo! All right.
Mm-hmm. But it's almost, a long ways away.
Almost the double digits.
It is, in fact, a milestone, I feel like. So we are barely over 3 months.
This kind of brings into question. So on our last episode, we talked about Disney travel hacks and trip tricks and trip tips.
Uh-huh.
One of those tips was, you know, getting there and not going to the parks on the first day. Is that what you two are going to do?
Oh, that's 100% what we're doing.
So when are you getting there? What time of day are you going to get there?
So we're still waiting on getting the flights.
Okay.
Because I have not found one that is early enough for my liking yet.
Uh-huh.
Because the plan, dear listeners, is to get there, and in case you didn't listen to the tips and trips,
which you should have, but anyways,
tips and trips, trip tips.
There you go.
There we go. So in case you haven't listened to that one, please do. But what we're talking about is, instead of on the travel day going to a park and doing like half a park day, you go to Downtown Disney or Disney Springs. And so that's what me and my wife are going to be doing on our belated honeymoon trip down to Disney. And so our plan is that we're going to get reservations at the House of Blues.
Nice.
And super excited because we've always wanted to eat there but never have.
Ooh.
And so we've eaten from like the counter service there, but we've never actually like gotten a
like
seat
gotten
there.
A table. Nice.
Yeah, it's super hard. So we're gonna like reserve a table like a few like. We're as early as humanly possible.
Hardcore. Okay.
Get a table. And it fills up quick. Like, super quick.
Jeez.
But the goal is to do that. And so we gotta, like, plan our flight to have, like, enough time to not only land, but get our bags, get an Uber over, like,
yeah,
do that whole shebang, and then get to Downtown Disney in time for our reservation. So I'm trying to shoot for us getting there, like, at 4.
Okay.
And having, like, a reservation for, like, 7.
That's
7,
a
8.
Good time. Yeah.
Yeah, figured like that. And we'll still be in West Coast time. So that'll be, like, 5 o'clock
Easy.
Our time.
Easy
so it's
time.
Like, yeah, yeah. So that's the goal, is to get in there, get there by 4. But I have yet to find a flight that gets us there
and
earlier
and
than 5.
You're going to stay at the Dolphin, right?
I actually think we're at the Swan.
The Swan? Oh.
The Swan, yeah.
Nice. And mm-hmm. Isn't the Swan within walking distance of Epcot?
Yes. Yes, it is.
That's crazy, because today we're talking about the history of Epcot.
Listen, Disney used to do Segway tours through Disney World and Epcot, and man, you could have guided one.
You took my joke and just smashed it right out of the park with grace.
Well, so not only are we going to be talking about Epcot today, this is actually going to be our first of what we hope to be kind of a series that we're calling Pieces of Disney History.
Come along for the ride. We hope you'll have a good time. It's a piece of Disney history.
Yeah. And that is an ode to a pin set that I actually do not think is running anymore.
They don't
if,
do it
if anybody, I haven't seen one for a long time.
Ooh.
And so if somebody knows differently, if they're still doing that, please send me a message. Send us a message, please, because I collect these pins. And so what they are is they are pins of prior attractions or attractions that have been like renovated. And they will take pieces of the attractions, like sawdust shavings, or a little bit of For example, the really big hat that used to be at Hollywood Studios when it used to be called MGM. Aww. There, they did a piece of history pin where they took a piece of the hat and put it in a pin, and it's in this little, like, globe thing. And so I have a few of these, my favorite pins that I have ever collected, because they're super cool. And so that is what this segment, or series, is named after.
It appears that they are not doing it anymore, only because... The only things that come up are just a bunch of eBay listings when you search it. Like, I don't, maybe.
That's always been how it is, though. I've never been able to find it, like, online Disney stores. I only find it in the parks.
I mean, they're super cool. Also, like, super expensive. But, like, you're getting what you paid for. It's a piece of Disney history.
Yeah, some of them you can find. Like, I've, in the parks, I think they were, like, 20, 30 bucks.
Here's a great movie ride one for 100.
Yeah, the high level ones are definitely a little bit more expensive. That same hat one that I was just mentioning, I saw it listed for like $300.
Oh my gosh, that's so much.
Yeah, it's a lot. But that's not what we're talking about today.
This is a different piece of Disney history.
And, yes.
And we thought, you know, the best way to kick off this little series, if it does well, would be to talk about the Disney park that probably has the most, I don't know, like, complex and diverse history. It has taken on many faces and has been subjected to many opinions, some good, some bad, throughout its life. And, you know, a park I've been to for 3 hours in my life.
And I think I have spent days worth of hours in that park.
So
days, possibly weeks.
So for that reason, we decided that I would get the background on more of the, like, big milestones in Epcot's history, and then Alex would get us down on the level of the people and talk about, you know, the views of the guests of these different phases in Epcot history. Is this correct? Am I understanding that correctly?
Effectively. Yeah, I found some factoids too, because it's hard to differentiate the feelings from the factoids. But before we get too far ahead of ourselves, the piece of Disney history series is going to be us going through different, whether it be the parks or the organizations or attractions or possible projects. We're going to be talking about the history of these different things, and today we're going to be talking about the history of Epcot,
which, you know, before doing all the research, seemed like a feasible task. And then the more you dig in, the more you unearth, and there is a lot in Epcot's history.
yes we haven't decided whether or not this will be a two-parter, but seeing as we've beat it around the bush for about like 7 minutes now and haven't even gotten started, it might end up being a two-parter.
What, you think I'm stalling? Is that what's going on?
No, but I mean, you're the fact man.
All right, then let's bring get right in. Into it, shall we? So for those of you who aren't aware, Epcot is an abbreviation that was coined by Walt Disney for the experimental prototype community/city of tomorrow. This was in the 1960s, and this was what Walt Disney envisioned as the city of the future, you know, based on the existence of Tomorrowland in both parks and just a general obsession with progress. It's pretty clear that, you know, Walt was very future-focused and liked to experiment and try new things, and so this was probably going to be his magnum opus in terms of, you know, futurist design ideas. And it was a self-contained city that was laid out like a wheel, much like the Magic Kingdom and Disneyland are, with a central hub, and in this town that would have all of the commercial structures and all of, like, you know, businesses and workplaces and retail. You'd go out a little bit from that, you'd have schools and recreation centers, and then on the very outside of the wheel, you'd have residential areas, parks, and things like that. The way people would get to and from the center of the city would be, of course, people movers and monorails, which is just chef's kiss, if you ask me. I would love to take a monorail to work. And then the best part, all of the cars would be underground. there was I believe in his design, there was one sub-level for car traffic and then a different sub-level for like semi-trucks and freight, which sounds amazing. I don't know how he was planning on dealing with, you know, the whole exhaust filling up a tunnel thing. I didn't look into that. I'm sure.
I'll be honest, like, I don't know if he actually did have a plan for that. So the thing about the experimental prototype Community of Tomorrow was that it was a very, like, utopian idea that Walt had. And the even better thing, so before Disney World was Disney World, it was referred to simply as the Florida Project.
Mm-hmm.
And the Florida Project had two main elements to it. It was Magic Kingdom and Epcot. And Magic Kingdom's main purpose was to fund Epcot's existence. That was what, like, Magic Kingdom's main thing that Walt, like, wanted it for, was to be able to pay to keep the lights running at Epcot.
That makes sense, because I read that, well, the reason that he never got started on Epcot was because the powers that be in, like, the company, as well as, I'm assuming, like, the city of Orlando, probably, because tourism.
Yeah.
Were like, you can't start on Epcot until you finished building Magic Kingdom. And then Walt passed away 5 years before Magic Kingdom opened. So he never got to, like, break ground on that, which, you know, huge bummer.
The board was really reluctant to begin with on Epcot, because there are some things about, like, the city model that Walt had that, like, isn't mentioned as prevalently as, like, this utopian vision that he had of this futuristic transportation. And also, just so we don't forget, there also was the World's Fair market that he had designed into the city, where the residents would be able to, like, buy food and wares representing, like, the different countries of the world and stuff like that. Like, and that eventually is what brought about the World Showcase.
Huh.
But yeah, that's kind of where that's that interesting. Idea came from. I didn't know that. There's an interesting, it's kind of a Disney legend. I don't know, it's unclear whether or not it's true, but I can get that into that in a second.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the parts that they don't really talk about a lot are the fact that in the city, so everybody had a job, but the idea was that the job would be less hours than the normal American workplace, because Walt wanted the residents to have time to experience the World Fair, go to Magic Kingdom,
nice.
And like focus more on family and their personal interests. But the other side to that was, if you didn't work, you did not live in Epcot.
Ooh.
Your work was how you got a house.
Right.
Like, that's how you qualified to live in the city.
To live in Epcot.
Yeah. And with that came the fact that there is no retirement age in Epcot. Because you do not retire.
You work
because
forever.
If you are not working. No, it literally was. If you're not working, you don't have a home.
Right.
And so there was no retiring in Epcot. You worked until you passed. And so that's super morbid, unfortunately, but that's like, that was some parts of the city that, like, made the board super nervous about doing that.
Understandably.
But, yeah, but Walt Disney was notorious for not allowing people to tell him no, because if you told him no, he found somebody who would say yes, and you found yourself with a box full of your things.
Oh.
And so
business,
he was a driven man, but a brutal business person. And so, but like, I truly don't think it was such a grand vision for it. And something that I really think was incredible for us to, like, strive for, but there was a lot of things that Walt, like, wanted, but it was other people's jobs to think about the logistics of it.
Yeah.
And I think he might have bit off more than he could chew on this one, because of things like the exhaust from the semi-trucks just being trapped underground.
Which is, take the cars and push them underground. Perfect. Yeah, there are a couple of holes to be poked in the idea, but, you know, when you're a big idea guy, that's bound to happen. And I mean, luckily, so while that idea, you know, came and went, you can still see a model of what Epcot was originally mm-hmm. supposed to be on, it's the people mover, right? In Magic Kingdom, if you're riding the people mover, it takes you past that big display. And I believe you used to be able to see one after Carousel of Progress?
That sounds familiar. I'm not 100% certain on that.
No one fact check me on that.
Let's ignore that.
Let's never talk about Carousel of Progress on this podcast.
Oh, that's not going to happen. We're going to be talking about it later.
No, it's so cursed.
Anyways, continue.
Okay, so all of that happened. Walt passed away. Everyone involved said, we don't want to keep going with this. You know, you've got the guys, the people that were close to Walt probably being like, we probably, you know, this was all his idea. If we tried doing it, we'd do a bad job. And then you've got all the people like on the city and like the board being like, people would die in those tunnels. Maybe not. So, like you mentioned with the World's Fair, Walt was always a huge fan of just World's Fairs in general. They had that, and they still wanted to keep the idea of Epcot around, and since you said, like, it was Magic Kingdom and Epcot, those were the two things that were the Florida project. I read this in an article. I could not find a citation, but it said that while there were discussions going on what the Epcot park should be, half of the crew was saying this should be, like, a celebration of tomorrow and of the future, just like Tomorrowland. And the other half was saying, no, this should be a celebration of world cultures and like international things and whatever. And it just said they had a model of a futuristic little park on the table and a model of a world market. And they shoved them together and said, why don't we do both? It doesn't sound real. But also,
that was, yeah.
Weirder things have happened as the origin stories for Disney parks.
Yeah, that was literally the legend I was referring to earlier. That the rendition of it that I found was it was like some random engineer Imagineer just kind of walked up and grabbed both sides of the model and smashed them together.
He said, enough of this crap. Ugh, that's your
pretty
park.
Much. And though it is, honestly, it's one of those things, it sounds made up. It sounds 100% made up.
Absolutely.
But so does half of the things that are, like, legitimately documented and videotaped about how Disney did their early projects.
If it were to be true anywhere, it would be in a Disney park.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that, like, the asphalt was like, melting.
Oh, yeah,
in the
on
Disneyland
opening day.
Park on opening day, I would believe that was like a funny little anecdote.
Yeah.
But they literally have videos of it.
Yeah. Like people like sinking of high heels sinking into the pavement.
Yeah, it's one of those things where even if it's not true, I'm gonna choose to believe it is.
Like that, like, and then the what do you want, water fountains or bathrooms? And he chose bathrooms.
That one, and there's like a few stories about different art pieces in Land and World that are like 100% not true that I found out about recently.
Do you have an example?
Actually in Epcot, in the mural, slight plug of the WDW radio show.
Nice.
I learned this from their show. The mural outside of the Land in Epcot, there is a huge tile mosaic that's absolutely gorgeous. And if you look, there's technically two tiles, one on the left side, one on the right side, that are slightly out of place. There's like an emerald and a ruby one. And so the story behind it was that the emerald was the birthstone of the artist's daughter.
Oh,
and
okay.
That's how he signed his work.
Oh, that's cool.
The WDW radio show legit called the artist and was like, hey, is this true? And the artist was a woman. Her family does these mosaics. And she was like, no, that's not true at all. And she's like, no, my birthday's in October.
That's opal.
That's not the birth. Yeah.
That is not emerald.
And she's like, no, that's, I mean, it's a super, she's like, it's a super cute story. And I love that people put it there. But no, somebody just made a mistake. There's millions. Well, there's just like hundreds right. of thousands of little mosaics on there, and they don't lay each piece themselves. They have a team that goes in and lays the pieces, and makes somebody sense. Just made a small mistake on the template or grabbed the wrong piece, or they ran out of the pieces that they needed, so they had to substitute. And so, but it's a super cool story, and the story itself is enough, I feel like, but it's probably one of those, the Imagineer story, but I love it, so I'm a keep it near and dear.
I like that. I also like that, that they're just like, nope, that's not true at all, but yeah. It's fun that you think that.
The guy was super bummed that found it out. He's like, I loved that story.
You can still believe it, but you know. Yeah. Well, so speaking of the construction materials of Epcot, this is a very poorly constructed segue. This is just a fun little fact. So, however they made the decision, Imagineering made the decision that Epcot would be two parks, one dedicated to the future and one dedicated to world cultures and showing those off. Epcot took 3 years to construct, and it cost between $800 million and $1.4 billion to build. And at the time, was the largest construction project in the world. I don't know what metric that's based off of. I clicked on the citation, and it was to a newspaper that was unlinked. So it could be in terms of cost. It could be in terms of, you know, probably not, definitely not land area, so maybe cost. I mean, $1.4 billion sounds like a lot for 1980 dollars.
Yeah, I mean, it could be caustic. It honestly could just be on sheer number of constructions and, like, size of team. Any number of these things, because I think, so, a little factoid for the listeners. Matt, I believe is it double the size of Disneyland or double the size of Magic Kingdom? I believe it's double the size of Magic Kingdom.
I would believe that, yeah.
Yeah, so Epcot, and I apologize if I got my fact wrong. It's one of the two. But still, think of that kind of as your reference. Double the size of Magic Kingdom. They're building that much area. If you walk through Epcot, they don't, like, leave a stone untouched. It is fully paved. There are buildings everywhere. The World Showcase itself, I mean, that's... I think even Seven Seas Lagoon is man-made.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it is, yeah.
There's nothing in there that did not need somebody to do it. I would not be surprised if at the time it was not the largest, like, land area construction in yeah. the world at that time.
I would believe that. So
yeah.
There's your little construction fact tidbit. And this was something I knew very little about, was what was there on opening day. Versus like what eventually came and what went and what there is now. There was like hardly anything there on opening day in terms of like the pavilions in Future World, especially was like very barren, and like all the spaces were set up for all of the like different areas inside the pavilions, but like they were still finishing a lot of stuff, yeah. Which is very on brand for Disney to open with everything still unfinished.
I feel like they definitely take advantage of the whole, like, people want to go and discover the park before they necessarily ride the... Like, discovering the park is its own attraction.
Yeah.
And so, like, you can kind of take advantage of that and not have as many attractions. And then just kind of fill it in as it goes. And now it's new attractions, not things yeah. we expected to be there from the beginning.
You can be like, come pay the same price to see us finish the park. You'll be one of the first, but we're not going to give you a discount. And everyone said, okay, sounds good.
And it was great.
It was great. But boy, did they face their share of struggles. Now, before I get into this next yes. section, I had a question for you.
Yes.
As a frequent visitor of Epcot and Disney World as a whole, when was your earliest memory of Epcot? Like, how long ago did you experience and remember Epcot?
I think the earliest memory, and I talked about this a little bit last episode, like the earliest vivid memory mm-hmm. that I can really think of was... Hard price, I don't know, like, time gets fuzzy, obviously, when you're little.
Sure.
So, I remember when I was little, we would always play, there were these lights that were in Future World. they were on the backside of Spaceship Earth. So as if you were like going towards the World's Showcase. So you've already entered, you've gone past Spaceship Earth. There was a couple like outcroppings where there would be these lights that they had put into the pavement that would like light up and make patterns and stuff like that. And my brother and I would like go and like try to stomp on them when we were little kids to see if we could break them. And you couldn't.
Classic.
But literally like that would be like after the park is closed and we were just like hanging out. My parents were sitting for the first time in like 9 hours.
Yeah.
And weren't pushing a stroller, which was a godsend for them. But then there's also just like the sitting in a stroller and getting a churro and like all those like little tidbits that I kind of like going and getting a Disney dollar before we walked into the park at the stroller section.
What?
Disney dollars are things that they used to do where if you, I think it was like if you brought back your stroller or if you got a stroller, they would give you a Disney dollar, which was like a little printed out thing. My mom has a few of them still.
Nice.
That's kind of like my earliest memories, I guess. Back when we started going, Epcot has kind of like changed a lot since we started going.
Boy, has it.
The first pin I ever got was when Epcot used to have the Sorcerer Mickey hand on it from like the millennial party, yeah. I think it was. And so the first pin I got has that hand on it.
Nice.
And so that's like my very first pin. My dad got it for me, I think, or they both got it for me. I can't remember which. And so Epcot back then was very focused on like the... It was almost more close to like a museum, but it was the learning park. Like there was Innoventions and there was I think Nathan remembers Body Works.
Really?
And yeah, Nathan went on it. Man. And so like it was very focused on learning and expanding your kind of intellectual horizons. The World Showcase was very focused on like sharing culture, which it still super is right now, but it was more focused on like the learning aspect. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a name for it for that kind of park and amusement thing, but the name of it's blanking on me. It was a lot different than it is now, and even than it was a few years ago. And so like that was kind of like the first. It's been interesting to see the park change like that.
And that's why I asked is like, I wanted to gauge, like, what have you seen change from in your own experience from then until now? 'Cause I have my one day there and I just saw like nothing was under construction yet. I got to go into the old club cool and like see, we didn't really go into too much in Future World. We walked around World Showcase, looked at the line for Test Track and then left. So like that's just the fact that in the last 20 years it has changed enough for you to notice the significant difference, I think just is a testament to like this is a constantly changing park.
It is what I would argue the most changing park, like, and by its very nature that is what it is,
which it should be. And that kind of gets me into the next little history section. So the park opened October 1st, 1982, and from the 80s and well into, like, the early 2000s, it was facing issues in terms of its theming, and as with any future-themed land, as Disney has learned very well at this point, you're constantly fighting a battle of the things in your land getting outdated, trying to put the cutting-edge things in your park, and then within, like, a year or two, it's outdated again. So it's really hard to theme something on a concept that is always outdating itself. And so that's what Epcot was facing, at least the Future World section was facing when they opened and into the 2000s. That's actually why they introduced the seasonal events being like the Food and Wine Festival and the Flower and Garden Festival. They introduced these seasonal events to keep attendance high. So they could be like, look, there's this new thing. If you haven't been to Epcot recently, you got it. Check it out. Come and see it. And I know they did a couple of other more obscure events. There were a couple of parades that went through World Showcase that that like aren't around anymore, yeah. But it was the same thing, like trying to get tickets up.
Yeah, so the events you're talking about, the two big ones, yeah. which are still around now, is the Flower and Garden and the Food and Wine. Both of them, I have been to the Flower and Garden, I have not been to the Food and Wine. But the Flower and Garden is amazing. It is absolutely gorgeous. There is topiaries everywhere, and the whole park is like done up like just a botanist's dream. And so it's crazy. It's absolutely gorgeous. You look up pictures of the Epcot Flower and Garden Festival, and they are like postcards.
I've seen some of the pictures of the topiaries, and it's insane. Like, because they're doing, and they're not just like green shrubs. They are colored, and like they're using different plant life to do the coloring on these animated characters, bringing them into 3D. It's nuts. It's its own thing. But yes.
It's crazy, but they were both huge hits, like right the moment that they came out, and they've been around since. And people will plan their trips around going at the Flower and Garden Festival, or going at the Food and Wine. We almost did the same thing, and it just didn't work out with when our vacation days came in. And so we were going to go to the Food and Wine for the first time, and then they've added a couple, or like it's hard because the COVID made things weird. Because there was like a weird one that they'd never done before, but everyone just called it the Food and Wine because it was weird. Effectively the Food and Wine. They missed the Food and Wine Fest. It's usually in,
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right when they opened up, and it was like, it was called something different, but it was pretty much just, it was the Food and Wine Festival, just a little later. And it went a little longer.
Was it the Taste of Epcot? Is that it? That's what they have listed for 2020.
I think that was it. It's effectively, whatever name they put it down as, there's food and there's wine. And
that's
the big
dragon.
On here it
says Taste of Epcot International Food and Wine Festival. So I would guess that's it. So just the fact that those two events are still around is a testament to the fact that it worked. Those two things they brought in to keep things.
Yeah.
To keep things updated and fresh and keep bringing people back every year worked. But there are other things that did not meet the same fortunate fate. Would you like to know which things didn't meet that fortunate fate? I'll tell you, it's most of Epcot. So many things have been shut down, torn down, replaced with a new thing. It's just straight
abandoned.
Up. Oh my gosh.
Epcot is a graveyard park with
it is
an abandoned
building.
I believe Body Works is just empty still, isn't it?
It is. It is an abandoned, like an urban explorer's dream. The videos I've seen of people walking into like the Body Works or like the Wonders of Life Pavilion, going into like Cranium Command. There's the whole thing with the Buzzy animatronic that we don't need to get into right now. Have you heard of that?
No, I haven't.
Have you heard of Cranium Command?
Yes.
Okay, the like main guy of Cranium Command, Buzzy, was a tiny animatronic, and he was dressed up as a little like aviator or something. The ride closed, just sat abandoned, like with the animatronic still there and with a spotlight still on Buzzy and the theater empty. It's terrifying. And then there's like footage that came out. This was probably like 4 or 5 years ago. Some guy went in there and like took video footage of it and was like, "Look, everything's still here." And then a month later or something, the Buzzy animatronic was gone. Like, so another urban explorer went in and was like, "The Buzzy animatronic is gone. The wires are cut." And, like, it's like he was ripped off. And long story short, this guy stole the Buzzy animatronic and somehow got it out of the park and was also stealing, like just props from rides where he could steal them.
Oh my
and, like,
God.
When he got busted, he had, like, clothing items from the Haunted Mansion animatronics, from like the Pirates animatronics. He was running a backstage Twitter account and being like, "Look, I just got these backstage photos sent in," and acting like he wasn't taking them. And then like the police got involved and found out that he did. It's a great story, but
I need to look this up.
You
I
do
need
to look
YouTube
that up.
Video of this.
It's amazing.
Oh, man.
We digress. yes, Epcot is full of abandoned attractions that are just sitting there. And, like, they're using backstage areas. They're using these attractions as just, like, storage now, which is super sad because some of the buildings in Future World specifically are so cool. Like, the buildings on the outside themselves, like the Horizons building, RIP, the Wonders of Life Pavilion, the land, the seas, like, they were all so cool. And some of them are still around and have the same form. But, like, there was the Universe of Energy, which was then Ellen's Energy Adventure, which has since been shut down.
Well, so you know that's where Guardians Cosmic Rewind is going, right?
Right, and that's why
So it's not going to be abandoned. It's not being used.
But the ride itself, yeah. So the building is still going to be used. There's World of Motion, which became Test Track 1.0, which then became Test Track Current.
Yeah.
Horizons, which was just demolished, and Mission Space was built in its place for better or worse. Have you ridden Mission Space?
Oh, yeah, I've ridden Mission Space many times.
How do you feel about it?
I personally love Mission Space. I had heard about Horizons a lot. It took until we started researching for this episode to fully understand what it was. I would love to see Horizons. A sequel to Carousel of Progress? Are you kidding me? How could they tear that down?
Like, I still barely understand what it was, but I know that it was amazing, and that it's very sad that it's not around anymore.
People still talk about bringing that back.
Gosh, that's... Yeah.
That's... I do want to give a little bit of context, though, to, like, all of these rides being torn down. So, this was interesting for me to hear about, because Epcot really did kind of become, not a ghost town, but, like, Magic Kingdom was the place to be. Hollywood Studios was probably the second. And then it was like Epcot, then Animal Kingdom. And so when you look at it, it's almost like, it's the adult park, or it's the walking park. There's just not any thrill rides. But there used to be so many attractions. But when they had all these up, and when they were like really getting into the gritty of Epcot and testing the Epcot model, that's when Euro Disney happened. Oof. And for the people who don't know what Euro Disney is, I believe it's now Disneyland Paris, right?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, so when they first opened Euro Disney, which is now Disneyland Paris, it flopped. Terrible. Oof. And it almost sank Disney.
Yeah.
Just straight up, because they put all this money. Parks aren't cheap, people. Like, building an entire theme park is not cheap, and it is like it's a risky investment. And so they put all this money, and the European populace was just not having it. Like, they were not interested.
No.
And so they flopped, and they really had to, like, cut back on a ton of stuff. And Epcot got a huge brunt of that because it was new. And one of the big things about Epcot was they didn't want to use Disney IP when they first started. And so everything was was off the dome. But the side to that was there wasn't as much nostalgia to stop something from being cut. Like, you're not going to cut It's a Small World. You're not cutting Peter Pan's Flight. The Body Works ride? No child's crying because or probably some kids crying.
The Motion Sickness Express?
Yeah, it's like, there's going to be much less, like, guest outrage from that going away, from a Horizons going away, and replacing those with more lucrative, more like tested lucrative rides, like a like a Mission Space and like a Test Track. The thrill rides that we know, like, they knew worked and would bring in people. So Epcot kind of, like, suffered from taking away from this grand vision that they had of, like, a non-IP park and, like, all educational stuff. And then Euro Disney happened, and they had to kind of, like, they had to do what they knew.
It's such a shame, too. Like, you gotta wonder what would have happened if they hadn't sunk, like, all of their money into Euro Disney at the time and instead just, like, invested in the domestic parks. Like, I feel like Epcot would have seen a different experience in that time, but... Also, wasn't this like around the time when Euro Disney was happening? Didn't this, the failure of Euro Disney, isn't that what sank Westcott?
Yes. So Westcott, we're going to do a whole episode on Westcott, I feel like, because Westcott was the West Coast version of Epcot that honestly was going to be even closer to Walt's original vision than Epcot was. They were going to have hotels inside the park that
was supposed to be like even bigger. And
it was supposed to be huge. It was a 300-foot diameter spaceship Earth that you would rise up in an elevator into.
Mega
to do like a whole
Earth.
A whole thing. It was supposed to be golden with like a dome. Right, look up the concept art for Westcott.
Oh, it's
insane.
It looks
so good. But so that was a concept that was being floated around heavily around the time of Euro Disney. And then when Euro Disney happened, they went, oh God, we can't do that. Like, this was going to be their most ambitious project yet. And it wasn't just Euro Disney that sank it. They had to do it in Anaheim because they couldn't add another West Coast city away from Anaheim.
Yeah.
And Anaheim had no interest in giving them the land that they desired because it would have involved like redoing all of the roads around Disney, and it would have been the amount of taxpayer money and Disney's money that would have had to go into creating Westcott. Westcott was not going to happen. Unfortunately, it's just Anaheim grew around Disney, and by the time that Disney decided they wanted to do Westcott, I think it had just been too late.
Yeah, which, yeah, you should, dear listeners, you should really just do yourself the favor of looking up the concept art for Westcott, because it's beautiful. But the funny thing is, you can actually see the first concept art, and then a few years later, there's another concept art when the funds start getting kind of iffy and it's much smaller. And then eventually, that's kind of like, that kind of laid the conceptual groundwork for California Adventure.
Yeah.
Like, there are some parts of the original California Adventure that you can see had their roots in the Westcott concept art. But this is stuff that we should save for the Westcott episode. There's a lot I want to learn about Westcott before we get into a full discussion. All I know is that it's sad that it didn't happen, and but we'll keep going.
We're rounding the end of the Epcot story, I feel like, and
we are around the end of the Epcot story. So we just touched on a lot of things being closed to make way for a lot of these things, and like you said, these were non-Disney IP things that were more focused on kind of education and exploration being closed down to make way for IPs or thrill rides or things that appealed to a wider audience. And that kind of brings us to where we're at now in 2016, which reading that made me have a mini crisis. That's when they announced that Epcot would be receiving the massive overhaul that it is currently receiving.
Jeez.
The massive multi-year overhaul was announced in 2016. And that was when they also announced that the Guardians of the Galaxy Cosmic Rewind would be replacing Ellen's Energy Adventure. And the whole neighborhood system, which is slowly being phased in, where you've got World Celebration, which is where you enter Epcot, World Discovery and World Nature being the two sides kind of what was Future World, and then World Showcase being World Showcase. They just kept that one, and I guess based the rest of the names around that framework. But it's interesting because now it seems like they're kind of trying to harken back to the roots of like the distinct sections of the park, and we didn't talk about it at all, but like the theming in Epcot back in the day was just on point in some areas, especially in Future World. Just like the aesthetic that they had, this like 80s, 90s kind of like bold lines, neon everywhere, the icons for all of the different pavilions. They're bringing those back, which I'm happy to see because it's a really cool concept. And they're bringing those back, but not in the same way, because they're just doing like the four neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to have like World of Motion where you learn about transportation. You're not going to have the land or the seas. You're just going to have like nature and discovery, which to their credit, theming it as discovery and not the future is the right choice, because then you don't have to worry about it being outdated.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's kind of where we're at now. how do you feel about where this Epcot overhaul is kind of pointing at this point?
So I'll be honest. So this is, I feel like Epcot is a very beloved park because Epcot became very quintessential to how we view Disney. Magic Kingdom is the stories of Disney, and Epcot was Disney's vision. And so it became very important to people, that park. And even though it had like next to no Disney, I think it actually had zero Disney IP in it when the park started.
Yeah.
It became part of Disney's DNA. And so I was iffy. I loved Epcot the way it was, but it had gotten old. Like you could see not the wear and tear, but you could see it started to feel outdated. Yeah. And the world for a park that was so focused on showcasing the future, it was showcasing a lot of stuff that had already happened.
Right.
And so, and like the architecture and the general outlook, what we viewed as futuristic in the 80s was very metropolitan. If you go and look at futuristic visions now, and it's very like nature meets industrial, like this modern simplistic architecture that melds into nature. And if you've kept up on like all of the updates that they've been making Epcot, they've been planting a ton of trees, and like they've been integrating nature a lot more. But the biggest thing that I think is a difference, and I was iffy about it, honestly, until last night when I finished kind of like my research for this episode, and after this, I was completely sold. So Epcot, when it began, was focused on showcasing the future. Of like what we could do, and all like the brand new technologies and where people could learn about new technologies. Nowadays, that's not as, that kind of park, in my opinion, is not as needed, because we have in our pockets computers stronger than the computers that sent first men to the moon. That we are much more updated on current events. We are much more connected to the wonders of what human beings are creating into the world around us. Epcot now is focused not on human technology and human advancements. It's focused on human creativity. Yeah. And it's focused on, like, not what we create, but our ability to create.
Yeah.
And it's focused on our ability to tell stories.
That's a good one. Yeah.
And so that's why, like, Harmonious just got released this week. A lot of people are not liking it. I have not seen it. I will not watch a YouTube video of a firework before I see the firework in person.
Fair.
That is partly because that's how I prefer, and also because I know it's really hard for some things to translate. They didn't design Harmonious to be watched on a YouTube screen.
Right, yeah.
And so I would rather watch it how it's designed before I put any viewpoints on it. But
yeah, that's fair.
A lot of complaints that I see are about how it has a lot of Disney IP. It has a lot of Disney music, and it has a lot of stuff like that, which is a polar opposite to Illuminations as well as Epcot Forever.
Right.
And so I think what kind of is happening is we are so used to the Epcot that we know. And we thought that, I think a lot of people, including myself, thought that we were updating the Epcot we know. But Epcot will always be outdated if it's the park of the future. But that wasn't really ever the most important part about creating a future world. It was never the technology or anything like that. It was about the stories. It was about the things that we create and our ability to create. And Harmonious is supposed to be about how the music that Disney has made, the stories that Disney has told, have interacted with the world around us. And so that kind of shift, I absolutely love it. I love yeah. that change to the focusing on making stories and the focusing on making things rather than like the things that we make, if that yeah. makes sense.
Yeah. And that makes sense when, you know, the theme of your land is something so high concept as like it has experimental and prototype in the name.
Yeah.
It makes sense. You're not going to want to get bogged down in like, what should we do to show that we are the future? It should be more like, we don't have to be the future, but like, look what we've done. This is a thing about like bringing people together. It doesn't have to be about like, look, we're better because we invented this thing and we invented this technology. But like you said with Harmonious, it should be about how what we're doing brings everyone together. And I agree. I think the direction that Epcot's currently heading in seems like it is focused more on that. Whereas Epcot, you know, 10 years ago was still just the same, like, I don't know, bad excuse for the future where it's like, come check out this video phone. It's the future.
Yeah. And I think it does stem from when I was a kid, we would go to places like Interventions and stuff like that. We would do all these fun things and they were always so cool. A few of them were like really neat, like motion technology for video games. That was the first time I ever saw something like that. But that was never like the thing that always struck me as a kid, because it was never like, oh man, like we're gonna have video phones or we're gonna have like motion games. It was, look at what these people can do.
Yeah,
like that's what always hit me. And to me, it doesn't seem like Epcot is being like, I think for some people it feels like it's being torn down and brought back up from the studs. To me, it almost seems like they finally like clued in on what Epcot actually was. Mm-hmm. It wasn't about the tech. It wasn't about the new stuff. It was about human beings wanting to create something better. Yep. And so let's focus on the creating of something better, not the better that we're creating.
Perfect. I think you nailed it. And also, this is kind of a side thing, I think we should revisit this discussion in January when you have experienced Epcot.
Oh, I hope the walls are down.
And it's glory. God, I hope they are for your sake, too.
Oh, I need it. I need those walls down.
Look, they've put so much effort into decorating those walls. It's not good. It's not a great sign.
They knew it would be up for a while.
Into the walls.
It's getting there. They're planting trees, which is a sign that in a lot of areas, they're not going to plant trees where they're also tearing stuff down, because that will kill the trees.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good sign. It's coming soon. And the 50th being here, Harmonious being revealed, they've not just shown that they're doing neighborhoods. I believe they are now officially called neighborhoods.
Yeah, they've got the signage up. Yeah. They've got like they're slowly unveiling the actual signs and labels for everything, which is very cool. Like
they're pulling back the curtains.
I'm excited to see everything. Yeah. I think we've kind of covered a good overview of Epcot's history and gotten into some of the theories and the design concepts. Would you like to take us into our new end of episode segment?
Yes, and before you panic and hit that unsubscribe button, listeners, Mouse-geared has not gone away.
Don't worry.
We are going to be, for these Piece of Disney History episodes, since they are very fact-heavy, we're going to be doing a less technical end of episode, which we are calling Timekeeper's Holiday.
We're ready to go!
So, this is a reference to the Timekeeper. It's gone by many names. It is gone by Timekeeper. It's also gone by, what was it? Was it Time After Time?
I think it was Time After Time.
Time After Time. There's been many names for it. It's been showcased in Disneyland Paris, Tokyo Disneyland, and Magic Kingdom. The Timekeeper then became Monsters Laugh Floor in Magic Kingdom. But pretty much you were a...
It's from time to time.
It's from... Okay, from time to time. So I believe it was pretty much you're like traveling back in time with this figure, right? Like this like clockwork figure, I think was the basis.
A super cool animatronic figure. Like, and and pretty early on in the game. Like, I don't know, this is saying like 1995, so like the 90s. Like, it looks really cool, and he also looks like, it looks like a figure you'd see in like Interventions.
Very, very steampunky. But so what we're going to be doing for these segments is we are going to be going back in time to a specified time period about the place or organization that we are talking about in these piece of history episodes. And we are going to talk about our magical day in these time periods. And so for this one, we're going to be going to Epcot, not necessarily the day that it opened, but we're going to say the day that all of these attractions that Noah listed off that had been so mercilessly destroyed.
Rest in peace.
We're going to be going back to Epcot in that time period. So Noah, tell us about your day in the past Epcot, in the era of Horizons, of Bodyworks, of...
So this was an interesting prompt, considering that I've hardly experienced current day Epcot. But also, I think that gave me some license to just want to experience everything. And I've already said this. The next time I'm in Epcot, I want to ride everything, because I really don't know when it will be the last time I ride something in Epcot. I think that's a good way to live life in Epcot. But I don't have a specific time that I would go back to. Probably like maybe like the early 90s, I think, is like around the, you know, prime time for Epcot before this kind of revamp took over. I absolutely would want to ride Journey into Imagination, the very first iteration.
Right.
One that there is like no video footage of, or there's like hardly any, but was just so well liked and so well reviewed at the time. It closed in 98. With the Dream Finder and the origins of Figment and the Dream Finder. And this is like the same era where there was that rainbow tunnel in, I don't know which pavilion it was in.
It was in the Imagination Pavilion.
It was in Imageworks right after. Yeah. It was like after you get off Journey into Imagination, you are in Imageworks, which also looks amazing. Like when all of these things that are abandoned now were, you know, were like well maintained and clean and modern and like full of excitement. That's what I would want to go back to. So I would definitely ride that. I would begrudgingly ride Bodyworks or Body Wars or whatever, just because, I don't know, I feel like that's something I'd need to do. I'd probably regret it afterwards, but I would do that. Horizons, absolutely. And I think I would want to spend a lot of time in Future World. From what I've seen, World Showcase has stayed relatively the same in terms of like the theming in each of the pavilions. Like, pavilions have been added, attractions have come and gone, RIP Maelstrom. Yeah. But Future World, and I'm going to try and keep this short because I know we're short on time. I didn't know this until a few days ago, that when you walked into Epcot, so you were met with Spaceship Earth, of course, and then when you got to the other side of Spaceship Earth, the two massive pavilions on either side of you were all just known as Communicore. There was Communicore East and Communicore West. And from what I've read and seen, Communicore was just dedicated to, it was like an exhibit for all of the sponsors of the park to bring their stuff and to show off their stuff. And it was like a big expo that was constantly being updated. And I just took note of some of like the funniest things that were there, because this was, Communicore was like a portmanteau of community and core. One of them, I don't know if you'd call them like an exhibit, called Energy Exchange, that was sponsored by Exxon, the oil company. And it was all about how power is generated, and like you could do fun little things like pedal this bike and see how much energy you generate. You'd have to pedal that bike for a week to generate enough power for this light bulb. Haha. There was an exhibit about how they prevent oil spills from happening, which has not aged well, especially with recent events.
Nope.
It was literally called Blowout Preventer, and it showed you their technology on how they prevented oil line blowouts from happening. But then there was another one that was all about communication, where you could use computers and use a video phone to talk to your friend on the other side of the room. And I feel like at the time, everyone, your memories of going and seeing all this stuff, not being like, wow, cool, but being like, these people made this. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I feel like the energy in those buildings was just off the charts. And so I would probably just spend most of my time there, and then I would go do the rides that don't exist now. I think that would be my day.
No, mine's honestly same as yours. So the World Showcase was the same minus Morocco and Norway. Those are the only two additions that have been added to the World Showcase.
Okay.
Obviously, stuff has been changed in all of those since then, but little attractions added, videos updated, all that good stuff.
Mm.
But all of those were there, the Canada, America, Japan, China, all of those were already there. But I think I'd still want to walk around the world. I'd still mm-hmm. want to do that. And so I think I'd start out my day just going around Future World, just going to the Communicore, like you, just feeling that energy and that excitement, and just kind of looking at all the cool stuff. I mean, the Exxon stuff is its own thing, because eventually Exxon, I don't know if you know this, sponsored Universe of Energy with Ellen.
Yeah.
And it was very focused on petroleum products as the one and only source of energy.
Classic 90s.
Yep. That ride was problematic in a few ways. Probably didn't age well with the energy requirements of the modern day. But I would love to see that kind of stuff. I would ride Horizons at least a few times.
Yeah.
I love Carousel of Progress so much. And the fact that I have never heard of a ride having a sequel. But that's just that idea is bonkers to me, and I love it. But so I would definitely do that. And then I think after riding all the rides that just aren't there yet, my end of the night would be honestly the same. It would be walking around World Showcase. I'd love to see what was in the pavilions, because there are gaps, effectively, in between those pavilions. Like, it goes Mexico, Norway, China. And so, are you fact-checking me to see if I got that right?
Oh, no, I'm just looking at a map of all the pavilions to look
did
at.
Did I get right?
Well, what did you say?
Mexico, Norway, China?
Mexico, Norway, China. You are correct, sir.
Nailed it. And then there's African outpost in between China and Germany.
Yes.
Nailed it.
Keep going.
Oh, geez.
Can you do them all?
Okay. After Germany, it goes into... Why am I blanking on where it goes after Germany? It doesn't go Japan, does it? No, it goes Italy?
Italy, yeah.
Italy, followed by France.
Mm-mm.
No? Is that one Japan?
No.
Oh, why am I blanking on this?
This one
What's next?
America.
Oh, it's the American... Okay, wait, so we're right in the middle now.
We're right in the middle, yeah.
Okay, so after America, then it goes? Then it goes France. No, it goes Japan.
Yeah, there you go.
It goes Japan, then it's, I believe, Morocco.
Correct.
Then France.
Yes.
Then Britain, then Canada, then you're back.
Nice.
Okay.
Well done.
I messed up a little bit there. But anyways, okay. I would walk around the world. I would do my laps, just honestly just enjoying. I would love to find a spot in history where Illuminations exists, and so do all of these rides. I can't remember the exact day when Illuminations. I'm trying to talk while I scroll through my notes that I have here of when it actually started. Okay, so 2000. So I think I can maybe hit a couple of those. Like, I think maybe Horizons. Watch Illuminations one more time, and then I want to end my night in the exact spot that I said is my favorite area. Yeah. I want to end it right there. I want to see what it looks like. Got 20 years from now, I guess. Yeah. Or 20 years ago in 2000s. Ooh. Or I guess since I'm trying to do Illuminations, it's in 2000s. But even if I couldn't get Illuminations, even if I'm in the 90s or the 80s, I'm ending my night in that same dang spot.
When did Illuminations start?
I mean, it says Illuminations 2000, Reflections of Earth. I'm assuming it's 2000.
The original Illuminations, I didn't know there were two.
Neither did I.
It's just Illuminations. Started in from 1982 until 99.
Okay, so the Reflections of Earth was then 99 until like 4 years ago.
Which is lucky for you because Horizons closed in 99. So
hey, I can hit the original.
January 9th, so there are 9 days.
Yep, you can go I got visit. It. I got it. That's my day. That's January 10th. Right there, January 10th, 1999. I was one.
Well done, sir. But and really quick before we wrap this up, this is for you, Alex, and for the listeners. There is a project that I've been following on Twitter. They also have a website called Futureport 82. This person, I don't know if it's just one person or if it's a team, went through all of the historical like documentation of what Epcot looked like. I think it's probably just Future World. What Future World looked like opening day. And recreated the entire thing using like Unreal Engine or Unity or something in a 3D space that you can explore for free. There's like a 360 walkthrough you can do. And then if you have like a beefy enough PC, you can just like free roam in it and look at everything how it was. And that is actually what I'm going to be doing after we finish recording.
I need that spicy link.
Yeah, I will drop it for you. But I didn't know it was finished, but they're always posting tweets about, like, does anyone have pictures of this thing? I need details for this thing. And someone will be like, my grandma had a photo of Communicore, you know, east north in this corner from 84. Would you like it?
Listeners, we will be dropping that spicy link Friday.
We will be dropping the link there, and if you didn't see it, it's just futureport82.com. It is amazing. I would need to find, you know, some credits to give, because it's an amazing project that this person just did out of pure enjoyment and respect for Future World and for Epcot.
Ain't that Disney magic right there?
That really is.
Oh, man.
But I think that wraps it up.
Have to wrap it up. We do have to wrap it up at this point.
It's getting up there in time. But
yeah,
there's a lot to cover in Epcot.
There is.
But I think this piece of Disney history went well. I think there are a lot of other things we can cover with this format.
We will be doing more of these. This was great. This was a nice change of pace. Still very, very focused on the history and cool things that Disney can do, and even the Imagineering aspects. Just a little bit different lens. I liked it. I liked it a lot.
It was good. Well, thank you all for listening. Thanks for joining in. Hope you enjoyed this. Let us know what you thought in the reviews or on Instagram, please. We'd love to hear from you.
Send us a message. We are active on that one. I kind of run it on my phone, and I'll as long as I don't think you're a scammer, I'll message you back. Tell us what you think. If there's a topic or honestly something that maybe we missed, like, let us know. We'll talk about it next episode. And can I just say the spike in listeners that we got for the Schmorg episode and are continuing to get warms my heart.
That Schmorg connected with you all.
Most listened episode, and it's episode 5, and I love it.
Nice. That is excellent news. Go Schmorg. We'll have to make Schmorg. If enough people listen to this podcast, we will be making Schmorg merch.
We're making Schmorg merch if no one listens to this.
We'll just
podcast.
Make it for us to wear while we record.
It's just ours.
Just a Schmorg.
But thank you, everybody. Honestly, this is truly the highlight of our weeks, and
true.
it's it is great to talk Disney, and it's great that people want to hear two idiots talk Disney for over an hour, even though they say they'll do it in one.
And let me tell you, you're my favorite idiot to talk Disney with. I look forward to these conversations all the time. It's great talking to you.
Oh, you're my favorite idiot to talk Disney with, too.
Yeah, you can look for that on some merch as well in the future.
Hey, that's a t-shirt.
Yeah. Thanks, y'all, for listening, and you have a magical week. We'll talk to you next time.